We know him as St. Augustine. But if you had known this man when he was in his 20s or early 30s, you would not have imagined that one day he would be joined with St. Paul as one of the greatest theologians of 2,000 years of Christian history. When he was younger, Augustine had everything the world celebrates. He had status in Roman society. He was a well-respected scholar. He had money. He was popular. And yes, he was a man with the ladies. He lived at a time of decadence, politically, socially, and morally. And until his 33rd year, St. Augustine would have fit right in. He was a man who had a love for life, and he lived life exuberantly. And yet, even though on the outside he seemed to have everything he could ever want, on the inside, Augustine was increasingly restless. He was filled with a kind of disease. You see, for Augustine, through his 20s, into his 30s, he was desperately searching for fulfillment. He would go to excessive pleasures. He would go to false religions, philosophies. He would have these dissipations, these distractions, these futilities that left him weary. And he would cry out, "How long, O God? How long? How long?" And then there was this day, he was in a garden. And he heard a kid playing a game, and it sounded like the child was saying, "Pick up and read, pick up and read, pick up and read." And there was the letter to St. Paul to the Romans, the 12th chapter. And as his eyes fell on the words that were before him, it changed everything. Those words spoke to his heart in such a way that he realized that here is freedom. And so at the age of 33, Augustine was baptized. Now it's a decade since his baptism. He's 43 years of age. And for the last decade, he's been thinking and musing about the transformation that has taken place in his life. And at this point, at the age of 43, he did something that had never been done before. He wrote a psychological autobiography. We call it The Confessions of St. Augustine. It took him 5 years to write this autobiography. And in this testimony, and the whole thing is written as a prayer to God, all 300 pages. And in it, he is able to talk about how his soul came to be at rest in God. Here is prose that addresses God directly. Here is a prayer of meditation. And as he begins his autobiography, he dips his quill into the ink, and we have these beautiful words. "Great are you, O Lord, and greatly to be praised. Great is your power. Your wisdom is infinite." And so beginning by focusing on God, he then muses and considers this question: what is man? And here's what he sees. Human beings are just a small part of creation. We are short-lived. And yet, we are those who find our true identity when we are praising God. And then we have what is the most famous of all sentences in the writing of St. Augustine. It's found in the opening chapter where he says the following: "You have made us for yourselves, O God, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you." And what's so amazing about this sentence is that Augustine lived it firsthand. He knew what it was to have a restless heart. And he now knew what it was for his heart to rest in God. Jesus in today's gospel helps us to hear what St. Augustine had come to understand, that the heart's true treasure is Jesus. And so he says to us, "Where your treasure is, your heart will also be too." And Augustine discovered what it is to say, "Yes, my heart's true treasure is Jesus." And what I want to do now for the next couple of minutes is unpack this a little bit by asking the question, How do we find the heart's true treasure? And our readings help to answer that question for us, because in that reading from Wisdom, we discover that the heart finds rest when it lives in grace. The reading from Hebrews helps us to see that the heart finds rest when it knows life's goal. And the reading from the Gospel helps us to understand that the heart finds rest when we learn to live lives of generosity. Three words starting with G: grace, goal, generosity. And as we understand and apply these to our lives with St. Augustine, we will say, yes, our heart is restless until it finds its rest in God. So let's begin with grace. In that reading from Wisdom, we had these beautiful words: that night was made known beforehand to our ancestors so that they might rejoice in the sure knowledge of the oaths which they trusted. What's the night? It's the night of the Passover, that night when God in his grace delivered Israel from the bondage of Egypt. God foretold to his people through Moses and Aaron what he was going to do. But not only did he foretell how he was going to deliver them, he also gave them clear instructions as to the ceremony, the ritual they were then to enact year by year by year in the Passover meal to commemorate God's deliverance, to commemorate God's grace. Now, the key to this verse that I just read is this phrase: knowledge of the oaths. The word oath in Latin is the word sacramentum, from which we get the English word sacraments. Here's the point. Just as our Jewish ancestors had knowledge of God's promises and were called by God to turn their hearts to them, this is exactly what the Catholic Church understands in the seven sacraments. For you see, the sacraments are the primary means by which we receive the grace of God, especially in the Holy Eucharist, which is the fulfillment of the Passover. And here's the beautiful thing about the sacraments. When we come to interact with them, when we come to see that the sacraments are the way that we build our relationship with Jesus, we come to see that the sacraments are that place. They are a treasure trove whereby our heart's true rest is grounded in the Eucharist, in confession. If we're married, in the sacrament of marriage, when we have children, to bring them to the Lord in baptism. You see, for us as Catholic Christians, everything is grounded in grace. And where is that grace? It is in the oaths of God, the sacramentum, the sacraments of the Church. And here's the thing about every sacrament: it joins us to Jesus. And what does Jesus always do? He always points us to heaven. I love the way that reading from Hebrews says that they were desiring a better country. It's good to live in Canada, but believe me, there's a better country. It's called heaven. And here, says the writer to the Hebrews, these people from the Old Testament were looking forward to that better country. Another beautiful passage from today's readings was how Hebrews began in chapter 11, verse 1. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. And if you read through Hebrews chapter 11, it's been called the Hall of Fame of Faith. The Hall of Fame of Faith. Because here we read of one Jewish ancestor after another, who braved all kinds of trials, all kinds of difficulties in this world, and that they realized that their faith would not be fulfilled apart from the work of God, which the writer to the Hebrews says happens in Jesus Christ. And here's what the writer to the Hebrews wants us all to understand: those who have gone before us have our back. And because they have our back, even though we move forward into a future that in many ways we might not fully see or understand, faith enables us to move forward in darkness, because God has thrown so much light behind us that this guides us into the future. The Catechism says of the theological virtue of hope, which is at the heart of this reading from Hebrews, hope is that virtue by which we desire the kingdom of heaven and eternal life as our happiness. That's exactly what Augustine discovered. My heart was restless until I came to see that eternal happiness that is grounded in the goal of our life, which is heaven, is that which satisfies. So grace in the sacraments, hope, because we know our goal, leads us to be people who live lives of generosity in the present. In the gospel, Jesus speaks specifically about almsgiving, which is giving to the poor. And he then tells a parable about slaves who are at home waiting for their master to return from a wedding banquet. And he makes this connection that those who are learning to live generous lives in the present are showing by their attitude and their actions that they are expectantly waiting for the bridegroom to return, who is Jesus. I love the way Jesus put it in today's gospel. Do not be afraid, little flock, for it's your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give alms. Make purses for yourselves that do not wear out, an unfailing treasure in heaven, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, your heart will be also. So here's the question. Why is generosity expressed in a particular way through almsgiving? And why are these the purses that will not wear out? Generosity is the outworking of the love of God. What will heaven be about? It will be generosity writ large. And so Jesus says that in the present, those who are learning to be generous through almsgiving are extending themselves to others so that their lives are conforming to God. There's this beautiful verse from the book of Proverbs in the Old Testament. Listen to what this says. He who has compassion for the poor lends to the Lord. Isn't that beautiful? That to have compassion to the poor is a way we lend to God. And then it goes on to say, and the Lord will repay him for his good deed. To be compassionate to the poor is a way to serve Jesus in a tangible way in the present as we await the Master's return. Here at St. Peter's, there's a practical way we can do this. In every pew, we have an envelope where you can make a donation to the St. Vincent de Paul Society. We have a box at the back of the church where you can bring in canned goods, again, to be used for the poor. You might want to work with our local society here at St. Peter's. One of the things I've just started to do, because I will not give money out to people downtown, but I'll go to Tim Hortons and I'll buy gift certificates for $5. And if a person approaches me, I'll give them that gift card for Tim Hortons. It's just a practical way to acknowledge the dignity of that person and try to respond in a small but caring way. We have a treasure that awaits us in heaven, says Jesus, and its acquisition is to be our greatest desire in this life. When we discover what it means to rest in God, then His grace will allow us to see more clearly our goal, so that in the present we will become a people filled with generosity. The grace, the goal, leads to a generous heart in the present. And this is what St. Augustine came to discover. He came to order his own soul so that rather than living his life because he loved life so much, he wanted to live a life of love. And that's what it's all about. As we learn to live a life of love, we come to experience a true love of life. St. Augustine discovered that rest is only experienced by those for whom Jesus is their heart's true treasure.